found this on Ganarum. Ganamir Ni.
What is it?
Well, it's, it's chicken.
Yeah, in my gravity boots. I'm stuck walking the hole with a pounding in my skull. Ain't nobody knows which way the solar wind blows. Better than a man being blown.
Welcome to Synthaholics, guys. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is...
Aaron O'Brien.
And we also have...
Guy Davis.
Yes. He's calling from a tin can tonight.
Out in space. He's in a, like, he's an Apollo mission-style ship floating.
He's on the Botany Bay 2, ooh, which they left him out, you know, didn't give him a good comm system tonight.
Guy, are you an augment?
I am definitely an augment, and I'm stuck in a DY-100.
Wow. That's wonderful.
I'm sorry.
And there goes your obscure Star Trek trivia for the night.
I actually knew what you were talking about that time.
Yeah, so, you know, things have
been great. Yeah, we're talking this episode, we're going to be talking about the Enterprise three-parter, Borderland, Cold Station 12, and the Augments. We've just been calling it the Augments just because it's what basically it's about.
Yeah, it's the Augment saga.
And
it's really weird. I think, no, this is not the first time there's been a three-parter that didn't have numbers in between them.
Yeah.
Deep Space Nine season, what, three started with a three-parter that also didn't have a one, two, or three behind it.
So this is...
Circle.
Yeah, this is like I said, this is Star Trek Enterprise. This is season 4, and it's episodes 4 through 6. And it first aired, the first episode was October 29th, and it stretched out to November 12th, 2004. So, the first episode is Borderland. So, we're jumping back into Augments, the Eugenic Wars, everything that stemmed from Space Seed, the original series.
There's a lot of nice nods in these three episodes.
Yeah, yeah. To a lot of that.
Well, this is all on the Manny Coto era of writing Enterprise. And as a side note, Manny Coto was an old school Trekkie. I guess he still is an old school Trekkie like me. So... He's been really big. If you watch the fourth season, you can see he's the showrunner now because at this point in time, Brannon Braga had stepped down. And he's definitely, we've got the Orions, we've got Klingons, Andorians. I mean, well, the Andorians had been through the entire thing, but he straightened out the Vulcans because he felt that the Vulcans had been too aggressive and too non-Vulcan-like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they really had.
And they really had. They were completely bonkers. And so he straightened them out. And he hated the fact that he was stuck with Stormfront coming into this. coming into this episode, he was like, or coming into the season, he was stuck with Stormfront Part 1. And they hadn't written Stormfront Part 2, so they didn't even know where it was going.
Wow.
They never do with the season finale things.
That's crazy.
I thought they pulled it off really well, though. Like, I like the two-parter for Stormfront. I think that's
it's weird fun. That they wouldn't have an end to that.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy.
Well, I mean, this is not related, but I mean, like, they wanted to make the Prometheus movie into, like, a trilogy, but, like, Damon Lindelof, who ruined the Star Trek in the Darkness, in my book, he basically ruined Prometheus. The whole thing was different from the original script, and I think a lot of the problems with them getting Prometheus 2 or whatever the Alien sequel is now is that they're trying to, like, figure out what to do because he ruined the story so badly in the first one. It's like, I don't know what to do.
Thanks, Lindelof. You ruined it.
You ruined the universe, dude.
Thanks.
Well done.
That's quite a title. Ruiner of the universe.
Ruined Star Trek. Ruined Prometheus. I mean, like, come on.
What else?
Ruined Lost.
Oh, man. should we jump into this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to start off here. The first episode was Borderland. And we get the very beginning of a bird of prey that picks up a transport shuttle with two humans. And these two humans basically take out the whole Klingon bird of prey crew.
I do feel like Into Darkness kind of like drew from this scene a little bit with how Khan was kicking all the Klingons' butts.
Yeah, yeah. I want to talk about the augment strength and their everything because I feel it's a little overstated. I get a little bit aggravated.
Five times stronger than a regular human.
Yeah.
I can count by five.
Yeah. So
I think Kirk kicked Khan's ass. Yeah. Really.
Well, and
he did need some kind of strange polymer pipe to do it, though.
Yeah, but I mean, I gotta say, Archer kind of like went toe to toe with Malik a couple times here, and he said he did okay for just a standard human, you know. All right, so
it does make you think how weak are the Klingons? Archer can beat up the augment that promptly goes off and beats up like a zillion Klingons, and you're like, wait a minute.
Klingons don't have to be physically strong. They've got redundant organs and redundant bones. They don't need to be like stronger. They just can take more damage than
human
than
punching
you.
Bags.
Foreheads.
Yeah. Well, so that was the very beginning, and you kind of like, okay, so we're dealing with something that's not normal here. That was the beginning of the show. We get into the next scene back on Earth. We get to see Brent Spiner again, and he is.
Yay, Brent Spiner!
Yeah,
it makes me think that his family line is like so. The Soong's family line is so inbred, or they just clone, or they're just clones of the same person. Because everyone in Soong's family line looks exactly the same.
It's very possible that.
How are they so smart for being inbred?
That he basically went into his own genome and manipulated it. So, like, he didn't actually, like, have the standard sex. He probably just, you know, did a fertilization of into an embryo with his sperm and made sure it was the proper genome sequence to make him super geniuses.
Yeah, probably.
So, maybe the Soongs are, you know, augments brain-wise.
Maybe.
That's just me talking. So we get the great-grandfather of Noonien Soong.
Noonien Soong, yeah.
Yeah, so this is, like I said, played by Brent Spiner. He's in a prison cell working on plans, and he's a genomics scientist.
Genetic
scientist, whatever you want to call it. And so he's kind of a dick. You know, he does whatever he wants.
Brent Spiner's playing himself in this episode.
Yeah. And it is kind of interesting to see him play like a very human character compared to the Data.
Yeah.
So when Captain Archer comes to visit, Soong tells him about the bird of prey and that they found the DNA matches some of the augments that Soong stole from a medical facility some 20 years before. But what happened was Soong stole these embryos and brought them to an unknown planet and raised 20 kids?
I think it was like 15 or 16.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe not all of them.
It was a handful.
Yeah, it was enough. And he raised them till they're 10, and then he ran away from them. It wasn't really explained.
I think he was arrested because he said he was in jail for 10 years.
Yeah, I know he was arrested, but did he leave the planet? You know, knowing that he was going to get arrested, or did he leave the planet to say, I'm going to go on a, you know, run for milk, and he just never came home.
Never came home.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably a little bit of both.
Really.
We're out of milk.
I got to go to the Orion.
I know they're looking for me.
I got to go to Valtex 3 to pick up the milk. I'll be back in 3 weeks.
I'm going
to
buy an Orion slave or get some fresh Orion milk from her tea.
Jeez. Green milk.
Mm. It's better than blue bantha milk.
Ooh.
Banthas aren't even sexy.
Is it bantha or is it from mushroom milk? I always thought it was mushroom.
I was always assumed it was bantha milk. Because they're like cows, sort of, maybe?
Cows? I thought it was like magic mushrooms. That they're always like drinking the milk and they're tripping balls the whole time. Luke just never left Tatooine. He just imagined the whole thing.
Oh, that's the twist for episode 8.
Anyways.
Table.
I'm just full of ideas tonight. All right, so they're going to take Soon to help them find these augments. Their basic mission is to capture the augments and bring them in. I don't know what their plan is after that, if they're going to poke at them with sticks for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, that's never really explained. And no. This whole thing, they're just trying to stop them from causing trouble, because yeah. That's what augments do. Superior, you know, ambition breeds superior everything bad.
Yeah. So everything bad. That's how the quote goes.
Exactly. I've got a steel trap memory, guys. That's why I can never remember people's first names.
So
you're like a steel trap, rusty and illegal in 37 states.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
That does describe Dave pretty well. So back to the story here. So Soon gets put on the Enterprise, and they're off to the Borderlands, which is basically like the fuzzy zone between the Federation and the Klingons and the Orion Syndicate. So dangerous place.
They get abducted by some Orions. That come a couple of people, like 12 people, get abducted by Orions as they fly through the area, just minding their own business, and it's a couple of Orions.
Yeah, and
looking for slaves
in all the wrong places.
I don't know. They get to Paul. I mean, you know, she's pretty prime slave material.
Yeah, she went for a lot. So the Orions were abducted, and then Archer confronts Soong, saying, "Hey, you got to help us get my crew members back. Where would they take them?" And he basically gives them the planet where most likely they went to.
And then, but he's mostly doing this as like an escape attempt.
Yeah, this is Soon is just
like an elaborate escape attempt.
Yeah, Soon is just like a Sherlock Holmes type of character, just super genius. And
oh yeah, they said they took a pad away from him because he hacked the whole security system with just a regular pad,
right?
And so he had to write all his plans on paper and pen.
Right.
Crazy.
Yeah, no, it was he's a formidable foe. So they go to Varex 3. Which is, I guess, a slave processing center. And this is where Archer and Soong go down alone to look for the nine Enterprise crew members that have been abducted. We have a great scene of, you know, the Orions. They got the slaves in the cages, and they're auctioning up off the slaves. And
well, the big guy picks the pile up and shows. She's already standing on a platform so everyone can see her. Mm-hmm. But he picks her up just to be doubly sure that she can be seen.
So interesting that Orion is a WWE wrestler, yeah. Big Show, which is...
That's what it really is.
Yeah, I'm not a big wrestling fan.
I don't follow it very much. I guess this is why it's on the Sci-Fi Channel now, because they've had a couple Star Trek appearances. You had The Rock and Tuscany from Voyager.
Right.
You had someone playing like Klang or whatever his name was from the season premiere, I mean the opener for Enterprise, and then now Big Show in this episode.
Right. Well, and he is...
very big.
Yeah, I think I wrote down here, he's like 7 foot tall. He's literally seven.
I would not want to wrestle that person.
He's
and I'm a very big person myself.
He's 7 foot tall, and he's like 300 some pounds. I mean, he's ridiculously large. Yeah, he's just enormous. So, anyways, pretty cool. Anyways, the slaves are being auctioned off. They have these implants in their necks where they can't really do anything, because if they try to rebel,
their heads explode. Woo.
Well, not just that, they're just extremely painful. And so that's how the Orions have this like control over their slaves. Going into there, we have, Archer and Soong go down, beam down, and we're seeing more beaming in this then.
Yeah, they've gotten over their fear of the transporter.
Yeah, the transporter thing is kind of like...
Also, they've also revamped the transporter set a little bit.
Yeah, it does look a little different. So something must have happened. Maybe they did an upgrade there. So they beam down, they locate everybody, and they Archer does end up buying one of his ensigns, and they...
Oh, yeah, the scared one.
Yeah.
It's like, you are barely worth the processing fee.
So he sells them.
Really? You stole them? Like...
Yeah, I know. Well, and then they bring him back to the ship, and they figure out the device that's on them, and they figure out a way to hack into it. So Archer and Soong go back down to the planet, and they hack into their systems and basically turn off all their the control devices and all the slaves.
Slave riot happens.
A slave riot happens.
Soong runs away.
Yes, during the in the chaos while Archer's saving everybody and beaming everybody up, Soong takes off, and then Archer has to go chase after Soong. We have a little chase scene where they're, and Archer, of course, catches him and brings him back. So, and Archer, at the end of it, basically goes, "You knew that this was all going to happen."
Yeah. Like,
and you put
you can't blame me for trying, Captain.
And you put my crew in danger, and you've permanently, like, damaged, like, injured some of my crew members for the rest of their lives. Like, they'll never be the same.
Yep.
So,
Soong doesn't care. No. He gets thrown in the brig.
So,
and they're on their way.
Going back to the augments real quickly, the augments, we're having a, we kind of skipped over this, but the augments are, when they took over the Bird of Prey.
They do some infighting.
There was some infighting. They're, original leader.
Paul Muad'Dib wants to be leader.
Paul Muad'Dib. Yeah, Paul Atreides from the Dune series.
The miniseries, not
the movie.
Not the David Lynch movie.
Not the David Lynch movie, which is awesome.
I actually like the miniseries myself, personally.
I like the miniseries too, but I'm a huge big fan of the David Lynch Dunes. But
I like the David Lynch movie better. They both have their own merits, and there's pros and cons to both.
Yeah. Well, anyways, we get the character Malik is sort of like he's like sort of the beta dog of the pack, and he's gunning for Alpha Dog, and so he goes in and he takes on the Alpha Dog, and I think he's just kind of doing it for the sex at first.
Yeah, you see, the thing, like, the augments work a lot like the Mirror Universe episodes, where, like, the woman sleeps around as the person she wants to be in charge wishes, so yeah. That they can kind of, like, get the person who's not in charge, you know, in charge out of being in charge.
Right.
I just feel like it's almost like a Mirror Universe episode, watching how the women act and with the augments.
Right, so the original leader is Rakim. He didn't want Malik to take on the Bird of Prey and steal it. Now that they did, they're on their way, to, you know, for fame and glory or whatever they're going to do. But Rakim confronts Malik sooner or later that, you know, I hear you're trying to take over the ship, and there's basically
a revolt.
Well, yeah, and Malik, Paul Atreides' character from the 2000 Dune series, kills Rakim, and Malik becomes the leader. So Paul Atreides as leaders again,
yeah.
Of the augments. So that's a quick put together of what happened.
Yeah.
So basically, the augments run into, you know, Archer, the right. Enterprise. They break out Data's great 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 grandfather, and they proceed to Cold Station 12 to get more embryos so they can raise even more of their augmented kind.
Right, and that's where we leave the Borderland episode. And then we jump to the next episode, which is Cold Station 12. Cold Station 12. The first part of the episodes we see a young Soong lecturing all the augments, the young children, and talking about how they're the eugenic wars and how they're hated. And kind of like instilling them their paranoia of,
I think,
of,
so
of standard
of
humans.
Of humans and Earth and
of, yeah, just the regular non augmented humans.
Yeah.
So next we jump to Soong and his grown augment children, and they head to Cold Station 12. And Cold Station 12, just so you know, is a asteroid in an asteroid field that contains the embryos from the augments.
It's kind of like
from the original eugenic wars back in the 90s.
It's kind of like our arc, you know, the arc that keeps all the genetic species, like seeds of, you know.
This is all the stuff you don't want to open. This is the Pandora's box.
This is the bad arc.
This is what you don't want to, because it has all the augments from the eugenic wars back in the 1990s with, you know, the Khan and all those characters.
But the main scientist that they go after in this to try to get the codes to release the thing, I don't know what the actor's name is, but
I have his name, but I just want to put on, and they have a ton of pathogenic diseases. Like, it is just packed full of diseases.
It's like this is your biological warhead zone.
Yeah, you do not want to. This is like
all the stuff we're making now, all these terrible diseases and biological weapons we've been making for the last 100 years, they're all stored there.
Right. So,
something like that here, I think.
Oh, yeah, no. There are places like that on Earth. Without
the CDC and USAMRID.
Yeah.
Both have all of these level 4 biohazards, is what they're called. The ones that you have to deal with while in full suit with, you know, external air and everything like that, and you have to burn the suits or whatever.
Yeah, places you do not want to be at all.
I don't want to hang out there. don't want a vacation.
I ripped my suit. Well, just write me off, you know. Yeah.
You're going to die.
You're dead. I'm sorry.
Sorry.
And a painful death at that. So Dr. Lucas is in charge of Cold Station 12. And just so you know, that's Richard Riley.
See, the reason I brought him up is because the first time I ever seen this actor was in a video game called Wing Commander 4. He was the mechanic.
Well, I'm going to tell you a couple things are going to blow your mind. So Richard Riley, who plays Dr. Lucas, was in a whole bunch of other things.
Oh, I know.
He's been in Quantum Leap, so he starred opposite.
Oh, that's awesome.
Twice. Different Scott episodes with Scott Bakula. He was in Roseanne, Boston. And he was in the 2002 Inner Light. He played
Batai. That's right, Batai.
Batai, his friend. And he's also played Seamus in the two episodes of Star Trek Voyager, where he plays sort of like the town drunk.
That's great.
Probably the most famous role he's ever played is Office Space, where he's the customer service, where he's, you know, he hands the plans or the specs to the engineers, and he's
jumping to conclusions guy.
Yeah, and yeah. He's the guy who gets like hit by the car at the end, and he's all in the full body cast. And he made all the money from this lawsuit. And he says, "I got people skills. What don't you people don't understand?" So that's him. I mean,
he's
across the board. He's been in a ton. I looked at his IMDb page. It is just
so many things. But the thing is, it stuck out to me because Wing Commander is another sci-fi thing, and this is and Mark Hamill was actually the main character in the Wing Commander video games. But just this guy, he's like a mechanic. His name is Pliers. So I'm like, every time I see him, no matter what, he's in, "Oh, it's Pliers." That's the first thing I know him from.
Well, and the other thing,
I know my brother will probably be the same way.
All the characters in here, especially all the augments, the big augments here, they're almost all voice actors, like in video games. Like, if you go through almost all their, you look at their IMDb pages, it's like video game, like, you know, like big games too, not like small games. They're like, they're like pretty notable in voices.
It's sad Vic Mignogna wasn't one of these augments. That would have been great.
Yeah, he's got the body for it, for sure. Okay, so going back to Cold Station 12, they head to Cold Station 12, and this is where they're going to steal the embryos. The Enterprise instead goes to where Soong raised the kids, and it's like a small settlement.
They find the retard augment.
Yeah, Smike. Poor Smike.
Smike. He didn't have the
brain capacity. He was the runt of the litter, unfortunately.
He wasn't augmented well enough.
So they find this, this non-augmented. Well, I guess his hearing's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's the only thing we find
spider
out about.
Spider hearing. Yeah. This augment has spider hearing.
And they find that the incubators that were originally on there were taken from there. So they
know where he's going.
They're kind of like, okay, now he's going to Cold Station 12. So Enterprise takes off to Cold Station 12, and they're given orders by their admirals, Starfleet, to do whatever you need to do, including destroy Cold Station 12 if you have to.
Anything is on the table for this. Just don't let anything out of that place.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
back to Cold Station 12. We see Soon and Malik and crew. They take over a Denobian shuttle, and they kind of trick their way onto the station, and they easily, you know, overpower these weakling scientists.
Oh, the girl does it by herself.
Yeah, I mean, it's just nothing.
It's great.
And from there, we see basically Malik become worse and worse. Like, you thought he was a little bad. You're like,
progressively more aggressive.
Yeah. And you think, like, okay, he's just a little aggressive. He's a little bad when you see him in Borderlands. And then here you see him, like,
he's just butting heads with Soong. It's just not good. He's killing people, and Soong's like, don't do that.
Yeah, he sticks. They're trying to get the codes for the embryos to unlock them, and so they can get into that vault. The Dr. Lucas. Oh, and just preference, Dr. Lucas, who's the head of Cold Station 12. He is also good friends with Dr. Phlox on the Enterprise. And this is mentioned more than once, like I think two different episodes prior to this, that they were friends.
Oh, I think
they're pen pals.
Yeah, they write stuff to each other. Yeah,
yeah. So this is the actual character, and we actually get to meet him. So he's supposed to have these codes. And
to let the augments, where the embryos are.
Right.
Because they're the most secure thing. Not the viruses, the embryos.
And Soong had previously worked on Cold Station 12 at one point, and that's when he stole the embryos way back when, like some 20-some years ago. So going from there, he assumed that Dr. Lucas has the codes open to the vaults of the embryos. Dr. Lucas says he doesn't have it, and since you did what you did, now the only Starfleet has the code to open it, and we have to, you know, call them and get it. And they don't believe him, and they take one of the doctors and they put him into a tube.
And they just give him like the worst disease possible.
Yeah, they give him a terrible disease, and he basically just turns into like a jellyfish inside the tube there.
Just bleeding everywhere.
Yeah, it's pretty awful.
It just gets ugly.
Dr. Lucas does not fold, to his credit. And
he is not that good a friend with him. That doesn't matter.
I never liked that asshole. Anyways.
He's fine.
He's gunning for my
position.
Yeah, he's a jerk.
Yeah.
But then you know, Phlox and
so the Enterprise comes, and the Enterprise basically is like, you know, we're, you know, coming to take over. I mean, you know, take control of the Cold Station 12, and Soong holds a disruptor to Dr. Lucas' head, and he's like, I'm going to kill everybody here if you keep going. And so Enterprise kind of tails off, but then secretly beams like a commando troop with Phlox, and which was probably a bad idea to put Phlox on that away team. And
Phlox personally asked to go down, and Archer's like, I can't see a problem with
can't
that.
Can't see that we're, issue
we're,
there.
We're dealing with the most dangerous people that we can possibly deal with. Right. And I don't see any problem bringing you down. That's fine.
Well, they get captured like almost in a minute. So, I mean, it's like, it's nothing. And they realize that Phlox is a friend of Dr. Lucas, and they're going to put Phlox in the tube and give him some infectious disease.
He folds like a stacked house of cards immediately. Yeah. It's like, okay, I give you the codes now. That's fine. Don't hurt him.
Yeah, and
his letters are just too good. I can't live without those letters.
Those must be some pretty good letters. That's all I'm going to say.
This is my first wife. This is my second wife. This is my third wife. And this is me with all of them at the same time. It's like,
wow. You live such a wonderful life. So he gives them the code, and they go and they get the embryos. While they're away, Malik has a field day. He starts kicking Archer's ass, and there's a big fight. And like I said, Archer does pretty well against an augment. I got to say. And they're going to basically just take off.
And they're going to leak out all these viruses.
In the meantime, Enterprise has engaged the Bird of Prey out in the asteroid field. Enterprise was going to actually send a sequence code to blow off Cold Station 12 with Archer and the Phlox on Cold Station 12, just because it was just too dangerous. They're going to blow it up, but they jammed that signal. So Enterprise was literally trying to blow it up, the asteroid, with
shooting it
with torpedoes. But then they got entangled with the Bird of Prey. But the augments and Soong escape with the embryos and
a whole bunch of viruses.
Like 300, viruses.
The worst of the worst.
Yeah, he picked some of the most terrible viruses.
And he's got the samples. He's going to lead them all out in the station, too, so everyone will die who's left on the station.
Yeah, so, and here's where it gets crazy. So, they take off, they get on the Bird of Prey, and they warp out of the area. At the same time, the people, all the scientists down at Cold Station 12 are still trapped and with Archer, and they're going to leak all the pathogens into Cold Station 12. It's just all going to release.
And this is where the episode ends, and the next one picks up. Yeah.
Archer has to call up this gigantic ladder.
Big tube.
To basically stop it all. Which just seems ridiculous that he could climb that in 4 minutes. But he climbs it, he programs it, but he only saves the people of Cold Station 12 in that room. And unfortunately,
he's going to get
exposed in this big, long tube. Right. So he orders to Paul in the Enterprise to fire at the very top of where the tube ends, and it shoots him out like a cannon, and they beam him up once he's out in space, and he's kind of like
half frozen
in his the vacuum of space. You know, you could tell the effect, and it gave him, like, you know, his eyes are all red and stuff like that.
They did really good stuff on him. Like,
it was really
cool. And he was only in space for, like, seconds.
You can only last, like, 30 seconds compared I think that's what they say in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. You can only survive 30 seconds in the vacuum of space. So I don't know if that's true or not.
Somewhere, Douglas Adams is going, did they just reference me scientifically?
I don't know if Douglas Adams was right, but yeah.
We are drinking, so I mean, to be fair.
I get most of my scientific information from science fiction.
Douglas Adams. Well, yeah, that's got to be true, right? But I mean, like, it's sort of, I mean, like, I guess it's plausible if he's only, I mean, he visits Bay for a couple seconds, but, you know, half of those couple seconds are him being dematerialized.
I can't imagine being in a vacuum space would be good for anybody, so.
Well, I just think it's funny that they're having a hard time, you know, calculating how to beam people up at terminal velocity, but then the 100 years before that, they're beaming someone up at the speed of blowing them out into space.
Yeah.
Which is probably faster because it's not like
not
gravity.
Not to mention, like, he shot out of there, like, that's shooting out of, like, a barrel of a gun. There's no, like, reason why he didn't bounce off those walls and that ladder a couple times. Like, he could have broken, like, a lot of bones.
Well, you see, if the tube was rifled, he would have gone out a lot smoother.
I know. If they would have machined that out.
Yes, Sigourney Weaver's never had very much luck with, you know, out with the explosive decompression while holding onto a ladder.
No,
that never works.
It's gotta
be. You can tell him all about that.
Well, he was literally trying to let go of the ladder, though. He did not want to hang onto it.
But I'm just
saying. No viruses for me.
Just like
Well, there we go. We've now made an Aliens reference and a reference to Hitchhikers. Right. So we're good.
And Dune.
And Dune.
And Wing Commander.
And Dune. And Wing Commander.
This is action-packed.
That's what three-parters are for, guys.
Yeah, so anyway, so they save Archer. They save the scientist. And I guess it's going to take, like, a year for Cold Station 12 to get, like, back to operational because they have to scrub the whole place. And the place is fucked.
It might as well be destroyed.
So that being said, we go back to the Bird of Prey with the augments and Soon. And
the last episodes were pretty much a chase. They're just trying to chase them down.
Right. And we get
Soon and Malik banging heads even more.
Yeah, and this is where it really starts coming to a head because, you know, Soon said, I didn't want you to kill all those people, and he basically said, you know, he told him what he did. And then Malik gives him the idea about starting a war between the Federation and the Klingon Empire by going to one of the Klingon colonies, firing a torpedo with all those pathogens that he stole from Cold Station 12 into the colony.
Basically, wipe out the colony and then cause a big Klingon Federation war.
Which would, you know, be terrible, you know. And Soon's like, what are you talking about? Like, that's like
genocide.
That's insane that you would even think about that. And
oh, man.
Yeah, and
he's starting to realize maybe he's starting to make a bad decision. And so he's actually starting to modify the embryos to take away the aggression. And Malik doesn't like this either.
Right.
Which pretty much scares Soong into, like, yeah, I need to leave. Can you help me off the ship, hot girl?
Yeah, and so that's where he has one of, Malik's girlfriend that he stole from Rakim from the beginning. She still has a lot of love for her father. And so she puts him onto an escape pod, and he shoots off into space. And thankfully, somehow, the Enterprise actually finds that
escape pod,
which is pretty improbable in my book. But this is, we're going fast and furious here. So he tells him the whole plan.
I'm surprised A, Klingons have escape pods, and B, that they work.
Yeah, I know. Did you notice how dirty everything on that ship looks? It looks pretty awful.
I like how before he got thrown off, like, Soong threatened to throw Malik into the targ pit, and now he wouldn't see the light of day.
Yeah.
So they just keep live targs in a pit somewhere on the ship. That'd be cool. I just want to be the Klingon engineers. Like, we're gonna make a pit. for TARDIS.
Well, that's where you keep the whales later on.
Yeah, that's right. Good call.
There be whales here.
Be whales.
Man, that's a lot of TARDIS.
I'd always wondered, why would you have these huge bays that hold whales in a bird of prey? But now we know. They were TARD pits.
TARD pits.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a lot of TARDIS to make up the room enough for two whales and all the water to hold the two whales.
Well, they gotta make their TARD quota for the end of the month.
Well,
so.
they do prefer live food. So, like, do they just bring the TARD out and, like, just start ripping it apart and eating it live?
Maybe.
Like, I just, like, maybe. Those are pets.
These are Klingons.
What was that guy?
The Klingons don't care. They're pets. But, no. You know, hey, they're tasty pets.
It's also nutrition.
That's right.
Yes.
I always like the joke that cats are Chinese food, and the food that cats eat is Chinese food.
Mmm. So, with Soon out of the picture, Malik takes full control. He goes to the Klingon colony to basically deploy his weapon into the atmosphere and killing them. Soon tells Archer when they pick him up basically what they're going to do, and Archer doesn't believe him at first, but then somehow Soon gets through to them. They go to the colony, and they just barely hit the, you know, they barely get there where
they're able to shoot the torpedo out of the sky.
Yeah,
which I'm not sure. Like, doesn't that still release the pathogens, or does it somehow vapor?
Well, if it's above the atmosphere before it actually gets in the atmosphere, it's possible they could have, you know, got that off. Just
floated in space.
Well, it would burn up in that entry or not survive the vacuum of space.
Yeah,
so. Or the sheer explosion would just burn that all off.
Hopefully. But wouldn't the regular torpedo exploding in space still burn the...
Don't
think about it too hard? Okay.
Yeah, you're...
I'll turn my brain off now.
I mean, the fact that they found them in that escape pod, it seems hard for me to believe.
Yeah.
So there's a fight ensues there out in, above this colony.
Soong knows where to shoot the
bird
ship
of prey.
To disable it,
and
they kind of take a couple minutes to trust them or not trust them,
and then Malik decides to blow up the ship, and at the very last end of it, the ship's destroyed. And they're like,
The
augments destroyed. Somehow Malik gets back on the Enterprise.
Well, I got a theory about that. Let's just finish this up.
So gets back on the Enterprise. There's a last conflict between Archer and Soon, and Malik's gonna kill Soon, and then you have
Archer gets like a
shotgun and literally blows a hole.
Yeah, a phaser shotgun that shoots like phaser slugs at a giant hole in his belly or whatever.
It's literally a circle hole through Malik, and like, Malik dies.
Why don't they use these things more often? Like, I don't think they. I think it's the first and only time these are ever used in Star Trek.
The phaser
shotgun.
It should be more of that. and then we get to the very, very end where Soon is brought back to his cell. Looks a little nicer, but I don't know.
All the papers are gone.
All the papers are gone. And
he's worried that his work has been destroyed.
Right.
Archer tells him that, look, it's so fine. We're just storing it someplace. We're not going to destroy it. We're just storing it for him.
Yeah, to be studied. So all that being said, the three-episode arc is kind of closed up there, and we're...
I think I should start doing cybernetics.
Yeah, that's when... Soon says he's going to start doing cybernetics.
Pretty sure, like, you've got to be super smart because, you know, pretty sure genetics and cybernetics, like, don't really work together all that great.
Yeah, but he's pretty smart. And he said it might take a couple generations, so he said he was going to...
He's going to start it on paper, which is great. But let me go back to that theory I was talking about, like, you know, because he does the thing, like, that Khan did where he blows up the ship at the end. And I think, I kind of want to think that they were like, hey, Khan already kind of did that, so let's have him just magically beamed aboard Enterprise so that there can be a different ending instead of him just killing himself on the ship.
Right.
Because I was sitting there watching it, and I'm like, wait, this is like way too much like Wrath of Khan, where he just blows up the ship.
There's a torpedo that's going to launch that's going to kill everybody.
Yeah, it's just like, what?
Yeah. It does have a lot of hearkening from Wrath of Khan.
So I feel like they kind of had him beam on for that last little fight because it's like, okay, we got to make it feel a little bit different than the Wrath of Khan. We got to give him like a fist fight.
So did he beam?
He had to have.
Is that what he did? Or did he jump through space? I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of things that could have happened right there.
I could survive in space 5 times longer than a regular human and not get frostbite.
Yeah, right, that's right. Right. Or explode.
Or have my eyes turn red. No, I'm pretty sure he beamed.
And they didn't detect that.
Maybe he found Psylocke's space horse and he just rode the horse over.
That'd be sweet.
Yeah.
This is definitely a fun 3-parter. It's super action packed. I think this is it's a little dumb on the ethics, but I mean it touches on it here and there about the augments and everything, but it's definitely one of the high watermarks of Enterprise. I think these 3-parters, it's a lot of fun.
A lot of fun seeing Brett Spiner in the thing. Yeah. In the episode, my girlfriend walked by. I was watching it. What's he doing? He's like, what's he doing in Enterprise?
Yeah.
Because she's more familiar with Next Generation. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's basically the episodes. Guy, since you haven't had a lot of talk about this, why don't you give us some of your thoughts after watching all 3 of these again and any reflections or anything you want to add?
Or actually tell us what you were telling us before, like how you made this into a movie instead of a 3-part episode.
Yeah. So first of all, I'd like to bring up some of the interesting background information that goes in some of these episodes. The Borderland is the last time that J.G. Hertzler makes his makes an appearance in Star Trek. So Martok, General Martok, from Deep Space Nine's in this.
He loves playing Klingon captains.
And just Klingon, so he's Klingon captain. The last time he shows up, which is kind of sad. But,
it is sad because it's such a small part for him to be.
It is, and that's his bow that he takes.
I kind of wish that his last appearance was Archer's lawyer, because at least that's like he's a prominent role in that episode.
Yeah,
in this one he's got like 2 minutes of screen time, if that.
Yeah, not much.
yep. So that's an interesting sort of thing about the first one, but. You were talking about what I was saying before. In the book that is 50 years of Star Trek, the last 25 years, that's apparently a 2-volume series of this book. Manny Koto was talking about the fact that when they had left the 4th season, all they were doing was trying to get to their syndication number, and that's it. The 3rd season, they knew they were canceled.
Wow.
And all they wanted to do was just make sure they had enough episodes that they could hit syndication and syndicate the show. So they pretty much just gave them a blank check to do whatever they want. You know, it didn't matter, which is one of the reasons why the 4th season is one of the best seasons of Enterprise. But on the
just
same
get us our syndication, damn it.
Yeah, just get us to the syndication numbers. Because apparently syndication nowadays is 4 seasons instead of 3 seasons, which is what it was back in the 60s. But because of that, Manny Koto started doing all of these little mini arcs because he thought that was kind of fun. And he was doing those whole things, and these little mini arcs. And he had said that he kind of hoped that somewhere down the road, people would just kind of see them as little teeny movies. You know, like micro movies or something.
Right.
And it's so funny because later that is exactly what I did when I had a whole bunch of Region 2 DVDs when I came back from Japan of Star Trek. Well, you can't play Region 2 DVDs in a Region 1 or an American DVD player. And since I didn't bring a DVD player back with me, the only thing I could do was set my computer's DVD player to Region 2, and you can do that 3 times before it locks in to wherever it is. So I set it for Region 2, and then I had to rip all the DVDs because I knew that once it went back to Region 1, even my computer wouldn't be able to read the DVDs anymore.
Is that a pirating thing, Guy?
Ripping them?
Yeah. No, I meant the Region 1, Region 2. Is that a pirating issue?
Yeah, I think it's an anti-pirating attempt.
Okay.
I remember when DVDs first came out, they were talking about region encoding. And since we were anime fans, we really were kind of upset about that because that meant that, of course, Japanese animation would be in a different region than American. So you'd have to buy a Japanese DVD player to sit on top of your American DVD player to play your Japanese DVDs, which was ridiculous.
Or wait for ages, and if they ever came to America naturally.
Right, but back when DVDs first came out, they weren't coming over to America at all. Because it hadn't gotten big yet here.
DVD players first came out, they were also $1,000. So not many people had them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they came down in like the late 80s, early 90s. So anyway, the end of the story is that I took all of these three-part series, like there's the Vulcan Forge series of three episodes and the Augment series of three episodes, and I put them together in Premiere to make one two-hour movie. And actually, the Augments is literally 2 hours and 1 minute long. So
that's awesome.
It's quite really literally, well, 2 hours, 1 minute and 56 seconds to be exact, because I've got it up on my screen because we're talking about it. But yeah, so it's very interesting because it does make a very clean movie in itself. I mean, it's got a good, nice three-act structure to it as a complete movie. But that was apparently part of the plan. That was apparently what it was supposed to be, you know, because they, prior to Enterprise, really those ongoing episodes, they didn't like them because in syndication, they would shuffle up the episodes.
Yeah. Stupid. So if you had,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. So if you had them in that way, it'd be, you know, if you had them where you had to have part one played after part two or part two played after part one or whatever, you know, some guy at channel, you know, 49 in Nowheresville, Kansas was going to mess it up and get it out of order. And then a whole bunch of people would complain and then the station would complain to the network that, you know,
right.
So it'd become one of those things.
See,
so they were always
numbers on the episodes. Just follow the numbers, please. It's not that hard.
Well, and this was a long time ago.
Sure.
I know it sounds weird, but it was, you know, 14 years ago, and that was a different landscape.
Man, that's so hard to like think of. That's 15. Like
I know,
like
mind-blowing. It distorts my brain to think of that.
Yeah.
It distorts my brain to think that I was sitting there eating Cheerios, watching Encounter at Farpoint on its first run. You know, I mean that's what really distorts my brain is when
was
I
that,
start. Thinking.
Was that Honey Nut Cheerios or just regular Cheerios?
Regular Cheerios, and the reason was because, and only like very few people remember this, there was a deal that the original Cheerios, I mean just the normal Joe Blow Cheerios did, where they had stickers of all of the crew members in the boxes of Cheerios as an extra.
For Enterprise? I don't remember that.
Not Enterprise, he's talking an Encounter at Farpoint for Next Gen.
No, well, the Honey Nut Cheerios, you could turn in your proof of purchase and get those Metal Enterprises. We got enough of them to get two Metal Enterprises for.
I got one. But the regular Cheerios.
Slacker.
I'm behind. the regular Cheerios had stickers in them.
Yeah.
So I mean, you know, yeah, and I was constantly buying these boxes of Cheerios, and I remember my mom.
Guy, wait a second. I just picture a young Guy Davis. You know, he's at the recess. He's like, "Look, I got these stickers of Data and Captain Picard," and the kids are like, "Who the fuck is that?"
I know.
And then he gets roundly beaten. Oh my god! I got it from a Cheerio box. They're like, "What?
I don't eat Cheerios. I eat shredded wheat." What are you talking about? Or yeah. I eat Fruit Loops because, like, my parents
blueberry.
Don't let me
have, yeah, blueberries.
Yeah, my parents didn't let me have Fruit Loops. I was a Cheerios kid.
Yeah, no,
I was a Honey Nut Cheerios kid, and I got those Metal Enterprises.
You were just describing that guy, and I was just all of a sudden just seeing you as a little kid, super super excited about these stickers, and like the kids just walloping on you in recess because you were excited about them.
It's so true, but the stickers came out like a month before the show did, so it was like the first time we got to see the crew of the Enterprise.
Did they have
and
like
the Enterprise itself?
Were these illustrations, you know, or were they like literally pictures?
They were photographs. They were photos of.
Did they have the LeVar Burton sex offender look from his like early makeup test?
By then, the production. I mean, by a month or two before the show aired, it was already wrapped.
Okay.
It was in post production. So they already had all of the correct
the finalized photos
like that.
Not the bubblegum pink Data.
And there's nothing quite like a young 10-year-old Guy Davis, or however old you were, like with a picture of a bald captain who you probably have never seen that actor before. And sort of an olive metallic looking skin android that does have a little bit of a homoerotic look to him.
Well, it was a confusing time, I have to of course the kicker to the story was I wanted all of the stickers. And there was only one sticker.
Of course you did.
You ate a lot of Cheerios.
A lot of Cheerios. And my mom said, okay, here's the deal. I'll buy these Cheerios for you, but you have to eat them.
It's like, I can't eat anymore, Ma.
They don't even taste very good. They taste like cardboard.
Got to the point where it was like, even today, I don't want to eat Cheerios.
Star Trek has killed your taste for Cheerios.
Star Trek Next Generation wiped out my taste for Cheerios.
Oh my God.
Sorry, General Mills.
I don't know what's more funny about that whole story, Guy. It's so, oh my God.
I think you're the reason General Mills is shut down in Buffalo.
You're like, we can't.
We can't keep up with the demand. And then
this
when you stop buying them, they just didn't have enough money
anymore.
This
young kid in Colorado just has a ferocious appetite.
Colorado's just buying all the damn Cheerios. What's his problem? Yeah.
Is General Mills still here?
They're still here.
Okay. Well, there's a bunch of factories that have shut down on Buffalo. So
So
like, I just assumed they're...
No, General Mills is actually pumping and still going.
They're still going.
And they still make Cheerios.
Okay, because I remember I used to smell Cheerios. I worked near the waterfront, and I get off work at night, you can smell Cheerios.
Yeah, Guy, if you ever come to Buffalo,
go by the waterfront at night.
There's certain areas at night where you literally can smell Cheerios in the air. It's not a joke. It's people...
Flashback. It'll be horrible.
Yeah, you'll be like, Where are my stickers?
You'll be like covering over me, and I'll be like crawling around on the ground going, I'm fully functional. Oh, God. It'll be horrible.
Oh, so, Guy, we'll just have to not take you to the waterfront at night.
Yeah,
for Pokemon Go, we'll have to go by the waterfront by day.
And day. Daytime.
It doesn't smell like Cheerios during the day.
Okay, so Guy, besides all those great great stories,
this is almost as funny as Trevor and Palpatine.
It is pretty damn funny. I have a 10-year-old. I don't know how old you were when this came out, but I have a 10-year-old.
Wesley Crusher's age, remember? He's the same age as
so you were.
I'm
what
he's older than Will Wheaton, so I was literally the same age, 14.
Yeah.
So I'm picturing a 14-year-old Guy Davis, juiced up on Cheerios.
Which had to have like 6 spoons of sugar in it to make it even palpable.
Well, I didn't think my Honey Nut Cheerios tasted enough like honey, so I would actually put honey in my Honey Nut Cheerios.
Oh my God, dude, that's so disgusting. I can't even wrap my brain around that.
People looked at me strange.
Yeah.
Oh, no problem.
Let's get back to the episodes.
Cheerios. This episode is brought to you by General Mills.
Yeah, I know. The actual episodes themselves, like you've watched, you know, watching the 3 episodes again and the whole feeling of it. I mean, what did you like, dislike?
I think that they really did. I mean, we talked about this before. I think that I was very pleased with how brutal the augments were. They felt more like something that, you know, you hear about the eugenics war. Even though Khan is pretty brutal, he's not that brutal per se. You know what I mean? He's not ruthless enough in my feeling, that wasn't, I don't know. So
well,
when
I mean, Malik even downplays Khan Duty and Singh. He calls him a coward pretty much. I mean,
from running. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, these guys were brutal, brutal. And it was really cool, so I felt like that was a nice balance for the augments. I felt like the Klingons were downplayed. I feel really bad that Archer and Kirk can beat on Augments, and Augments can beat on Klingons, and somehow Klingons are scary to humans? You know, because really?
I really hope Star Trek Discovery will make Klingons scary for the first time ever.
Make Klingons scary again.
Make Klingons scary again. I need to get a red hat that says that.
Red hat that says that. I think
there should be a hat that says that. Yeah.
Make Klingons scary again.
Yeah.
maybe it'll be our inner Synthaholic store if we ever decide to make one.
Right.
That's our Synthaholic thing. You know, in the beginning of yesterday's Enterprise, you know, Worf says, "I would need a Klingon woman," you know, because humans are too fragile. And I'm like, really? Because they're kind of beating on the Augments, who are beating on the Klingons, you know, and Dax seems to have no problem beating on the Klingons. And so it's kind of one of those things is like, I think that we have fluctuation on how strong are Klingons anyway. So that's frustrating a little bit on this. Other than that, it's a fun episode, or fun series of episodes, I guess. I think that Cold Station 12 is probably the weakest of the three, but it is interesting.
Well, it's also the middle part. I mean, usually the middle parts of stories are kind of like the bridges.
Yeah. I think it's cool that the Briar Patch is referred to as Clochtakel Brocht, which is cool.
Oh, yeah. And also in that episode, LeVar Burton is directing. It's the first time LeVar Burton has directed Brent Spiner since, like, TNG, I think.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
So that was kind of cool. And the fact that they both mentioned the Briar Patch, since that's the last time they were in a movie. No, this is the last time they were together. But it was kind of a fun nod to Insurrection that they're going to the Briar Patch.
Mm-hmm.
And if they would have gone there, they could have lived forever because of the rings of the planet are magic.
Yep.
Magic ring. They make your boobs firmer. So
lucky magic rings.
Well, too bad
they make your breasts firmer.
Too bad he kills the girl before her breasts can get firmer. Although it was pretty cold in that room when they were filming that scene.
Yeah, I saw that.
I was like,
I saw a little nipple action in there.
I saw two.
Dave,
I actually had to rewind it on that scene to see like what.
I bet you did.
No, not the nipples, just the like whenever he was fighting her and killing her, because it looked like he was just pulling on her arm. I'm like, why is he pulling on her? Like, is that a wrestling move? Is she faking being hurt because they're wrestling? Like,
mommy, why is that man putting that in your? All right,
I had to rewind the strike. Like, basically, he lifts up her arm and like I guess cuts her like underneath the armpit and like collapses her lungs or something. I'm not sure what, unless their heart's on the wrong side. Like, I'm not sure, like, what that death blow is.
Paul Atreides is a Slim Shady.
Yeah.
Paul
Muad'Dib.
All right, so, Dave, besides boob shots and all that other stuff, what's your thoughts on these episodes?
I thought they were fun. Season 4 of Enterprise is probably one of the most solid seasons of Absolutely. Star Trek ever. So just having a fun three-parter like this, just it was great. And it's also always great to see Pliers whenever he shows up.
Pliers.
Because he'll forever be Pliers to me. Obscure video game references.
Anything else?
Oh, and I also thought it was funny that Paul Muad'Dib was in this episode because we do our one non-Star Trek episode a month. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about doing a series on Dune.
Yep.
That'll span a couple months. So if we can find a legit copy of this.
Many, many months. Just buckle up, people. Now, here's my thing. There's a couple things with this. First of all, fun episodes, a lot of high adventure, which sometimes Enterprise lacks a little bit, but it's still fun. The Augments thing, I just get kind of tired of it. It's a little played out. I don't like dislike this episode whatsoever, but I think they can find some different subject matter to talk about. It's like, how many times can they find stuff from the Eugenic Wars to bring into, like, you know, three centuries later?
But how many times is the Eugenics War stuff going to play out exactly the same way?
Yeah.
Like, it was just a little bit too on the nose, like him just destroying the ship because reasons. It's like, I'd rather die than live on a planet forever and stay forever young and get my man boobs firmer. Like, it's just, I don't understand, like, I mean, like, superior strength, you know, and intelligence breeds superior ambition. Like, well, superior ambition to die? Like, I don't understand, like, why the Augments are always like, well, if I can't get my way, I'm going to kill myself.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, find a new way or new hobby or something. I just don't understand, like, why they have to end up pretty much killing themselves. I know they didn't, but like I said earlier, I'm pretty sure they had that last little fight there just to be like, oh, it's not exactly like, you know, Khan. It's a little bit different.
The other thing is, what is the deal with the Augment's fashion sense? I mean, they are literally always in ripped up clothes.
Like, yeah. Well, I think they just didn't get new clothes. He went to the store to get that Orion milk and some new clothes, and they just didn't have any new clothes.
So I mean,
they wore their clothes from when they were 9, so it just stretched out and got a bunch of holes.
Their underoos from when they were 9. I mean, it is one of those things that is just like, it's like at some point they could have changed their clothes, but they're still in the ripped up clothes, and it just, you got to like, what?
Oh, something that also strikes out to me, that apparently Klingon sleeping style has changed between Enterprise and Next Generation, because Klingon style sleeping was on that grate of metal.
Yeah.
And in this episode, they're sleeping on that Klingon bed, which looks like it's made by orcs.
Well,
which I mean,
it might not have been a Klingon. They might have been like, this is not, I'm not sleeping on that shit. Throwing down some pillows from, I'm beaming that up from the planet.
But it looked like it was made of like weird chunks of wood or tusks of animals and like all those animal skins on it. That looked like a legit, like, you know, barbarian looking bed. Like Klingons are pretty much barbarians, and I'm like, huh, like maybe they, you know, or maybe that was the captain's quarters, the captain gets a special bed.
Well, and then the next thing I just want to just touch on is Archer's thoughts on his father's death with the Clark syndrome, and how he was soon mentioned that, you know, we could just cure that, you know, genetically, we mm-hmm. could just alter it, and like apparently, so because we don't genetically like change people in the future, we don't even cure diseases that we could obviously cure.
Well, I think in Deep Space Nine, when Bashir comes out that he's an Augment, I think they mentioned that curing diseases is okay. You just can't enhance them. Where Bashir was cured from his like retarded, you know, self, and then also enhanced.
I think that
part of that, though, is, and that might have been that in Enterprise's time, it was so close to the eugenics war that they just pretty much did the so complete close. And total, that's it, nobody touches genes, leave them alone. Yeah, and then after time goes on, they, you know, they loosen up a little.
But that's like 200 years. I mean, between Enterprise and 1990, what is it? Like, it's 2000, I mean, 2150 something where this is all taking place.
Yeah.
And, yeah, obviously the Genetic Wars took place in the 1990s. So, I don't know. It just seems like one of those things, like, so if you could cure it, why wouldn't you cure it? Or wouldn't you find some way to work around that? But I find that a little troublesome, that just because they have a kind of a rule or a law about it, you know, that there's like no way, we're never changing that. So,
yeah,
I don't know. It seemed a little dumb. But I
guess, heavy-handed?
Yeah. I mean, I know, you know, 30 million people died, but whatever.
But reasons.
But reasons, reasons. But it was definitely fun. I really enjoyed it. I think the high point for me was Archer shooting out of that, you know, access panel when he...
It was a really cool scene. Really cool. Like, and they did a really good job with the makeup and...
Yeah.
And... I don't know how plausible it is, but I mean, if it's plausible at all, I think they
handled it really the best way they possibly could.
Possibly could have, like, scientifically, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I enjoyed that. That was probably the best. That was the most entertaining part for me. I mean, I mean, there's lots of other things I liked. Yeah, the Augments, they get a little bit, like...
I just wish they...
Two-dimensional.
Like, the only thing, I just wish it would have played out a little bit different, or I wish they had, like, a more clear end game than, like, just using some kind of weapon of mass destruction.
Well, that's the other thing, is, like, Malik and crew seem to want the guidance assumed for a while, and then Malik seemed to kind of surpass that and say, like, you don't have any answers, or not the answers
that we want, yeah.
And I'm going to go forward from here, you know? So
I would go to SETI Alpha 6. Because when Soong questions, well, where would you go if you don't want to go to the Briar Patch and,
right.
and live on the Forever Planet?
Right. And they do
hang out there. They won't have nothing bad will happen here.
Oh, man, that would have been so good if like they actually went through and did that. That would have changed. Well, Nemesis. I mean, Insurrection would have already been out, but that would have been really interesting. Like them subjugating the Beku. The lamb yeah. Beku. Well, we don't want to use technology. We've got shit tons of it hidden underground because they can fix data or whatever, but we're just going to leave it underground.
Well, you know.
Because we rather dig in the dirt with our bare hands.
Kind of going back to the old Quaker way of life.
And apparently not ever have sex, because the Plinkett video for Insurrection, he, you know, on an agrarian society, he was like, the population for people who never grow old and, you know, don't have anything to do but farm, they should be having a lot more sex and they should be having a lot more children. And their population's really absurdly low for how long they've been there.
Well, they could have birth control.
That's technology. It's underground. We don't have that. Or maybe they use sheepskins.
There you go. Handmade sheepskins.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The finest sheepskins.
The finest sheep intestine condoms known to Beku.
I've never seen workmanship quite like this.
Oh my.
They contour it right to your penis. The whole augment crew seemed to kind of like become two-dimensional to me.
Yeah.
I kind of wish they had some... I mean, you
it's
saw
a different endgame. I mean, because it's fun having the augments, but it was almost a Wrath of Khan rehash.
And honestly, I kind of felt like there should have been maybe a schism or split between them and say, hey, some of them are going to go with Soong, and we're going to go to this planet in the Briar Patch, and we're just going to live out peacefully because, you know, yeah, we're aggressive, but we don't want to kill everybody. You know, there's got to be that kind of augment that don't want to kill
everybody. Some kind of middle ground.
Right.
Yeah, although, you know, all the times we've had an attempt at a rehash of Star Trek II, at least this one's not as offensive.
Well, yeah.
It's definitely not as offensive.
Yeah, but yeah. I guess it gets a little, to me, it seems gets silly that there's so many damn augments floating around out in space and they're all, like, ridiculously, like...
Superpowered.
Yeah.
Like the littlest kick sends people flying and flipping. It's great.
That's the part where I get a little bit like, come on. Give me a break.
It's action movie schlock. It's great.
It's just like, yeah, I know they're stronger and I know they're faster and smarter, but like, I have a hard time believing that they're like ridiculously, like, especially when we see Into Darkness, Khan is like basically, you know, Captain America.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
Well, how many times stronger is Captain America the Riddler? Is it six times? I don't know.
Captain America, from what I recall, and this is going back to the 80s.
Old comics.
Yeah, the 80s. I think he can bench press like just under 1,000 pounds. So he's really strong.
Like, isn't the strongest man in the world currently able to deadlift 1,000 pounds, though?
Yeah, but I mean, like, he's just like, we can, like, he can press that, you know, so I mean,
so if he's five times stronger than the strongest man, the augment's going to do 5,000 pounds, maybe.
Yeah, like, when I used to weightlift way back when, many, many years ago, and I could do...
Many moons.
Many, many moons. I could go a little over 200 pounds.
Nice.
That was pretty good back then.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I could even do that now, so...
I don't know.
What's 1,000 pounds?
Let's just
if it's an Aaron augment, an augmented Aaron.
Yeah,
I was. I'm not bragging, but as a young man, I was extremely strong. Like, I was just very strong. Like, I could, when I would play football, like, I could be a running back. I could have like three guys hang on me. I could keep running. You know,
that's awesome.
But you know, that's all gone.
Unfortunately, we get old.
We get old, and my back hurts.
And my knees hurt.
I only had the one guy hanging on to you now.
Yeah.
Right?
Just Dave.
Like, yeah, I'm hanging on to him right
just
now.
Just Dave.
Snuggled up on the couch.
Running good evil time.
When I walk down the hall, he kind of hangs onto my ankles, and I got to drag him across the floor. Where you going?
What's up, man? All right. Well, that was a fun talking to Enterprise. It's been a little bit since we've done Enterprise, I think.
Yeah, when was the last time we talked to Enterprise?
It's been a while, I think. I can't remember.
I know we did Carbon Creek.
That was almost a year ago,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
It's been a long time. So, it's been a long road. Getting from there to here.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah. Well, Well, you can find us singing badly.
Men singing badly.
All our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com and at Warp 11 on Twitter. You can find us online on Twitter at Synthaholic Duo, me at David_J_Duncan.
I'm at Blackbird2004.
And I'm at USS Tamerlan and witchesofflame.com.
Yeah, and if you could, after hearing this episode of Augments, we'd like you to augment our status on iTunes and all the different kinds of search engines out there. Go out there, go on iTunes, give us 5 stars, talk to us, give us a comment and say, hey, we love listening to these guys. And on top of that, you know, if you have a friend who likes sci-fi, who likes goofy commentary on any kind of TV show, especially Star Trek, you know, give them our number and we'll give them a call.
Yeah.
We'll leave sexy messages on their machine.
And our dulcet tones.
Yes, the dulcet tones of Guy Davis.
The dulcet tones of Guy Davis.
You know, we're also on Google Play Music. We're on iHeartRadio. Our episodes are now showing up on YouTube.
We're everywhere.
You can come and talk to us on Synthaholics. Our Facebook group is facebook.com/groups@Synthaholics. You can email us at Synthaholics@yahoo.com.
Email us. Tell us what you think.
Tell us what you think. What you want.
Give us commentary.
If you have any questions, ask us. If you have any suggestions for future topics, send them to us.
If you have any arguments that you do not like, if you don't like me, let me know.
Yeah, we want to hear all of the above. Also, if you think our show's good enough to donate to, give us a dollar. We have a Patreon. We're at patreon.com/Synthaholics. Support our show. Guy Davis has his Patreon at patreon.com/gsdavisart, so you can support his art. And he is an artist for a living, and he does his own podcast as well as ours, so support us.
I can take all the support I can get.
Yeah, and check while you're at it, check out the USS Tamerlan, his webcomic, and also his Witches of Flame, his new webcomic that he's working on now.
Yeah, and check out our friends the Geekyverse and the Artful Gremlins, who we've been hearing our crossover episodes, our non-Star Trek episodes. They do great geek-related content or just off-the-topic crazy stuff. So check them out at their respective websites as well. We have a Friends of Synthaholics link on our webpage where you can find their information and check them out.
Good guys. Lots of fun over there.
Yeah.
Well, thank you all so very much for listening. Live long and prosper. Vulcan. Throwing Vulcan gang signs. Started.
Do you want to play a game?
Shall we sharted our pants?
Shot my pants. I sharted.
The San Francisco Strait.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I'm not doing the intro because I know it blows Guy out of the water, so we'll just go in regular.
We're going in dry. Going in dry, Guy. Hope you're ready.
No KY needed.
Nothing.
Okay, I'm ready when you guys are. I'm watching Augments. You guys can sit there and yammer. I'm watching Augments. I don't know what your problem is.
All right.
So, when I was, as a side note, when I was in Japan, I bought a lot of these Region 2 DVDs.